Hello and welcome to another episode of the Grains West podcast. Go with the flow, efficient irrigation in dry times. I'm your host, Jeff Clovis. Grains West magazine is published by Alberta Grains. It's our goal to connect farmers, food, and ideas. To read our exclusive online-only stories or subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, you can visit grainswest.com. Water scarcity has become a topic of great concern to Alberta farmers in recent years. In the summer of 2023, drought conditions led to water restrictions in some areas of southern Alberta. In the typically arid Eastern Irrigation District, efficient use of water is critically important. Don Tess is a Grains West contributor and beer expert. In today's podcast episode, he talks with farmer and distiller Lars Hirsch, who gets a sense of how water issues affect farmers in Alberta's irrigation belt. Located in the Rolling Hills area of the county of Newell, Hirsch grows barley and other cereals under irrigation for livestock feed as feedstock for his distilling business, Pivot Spirits. Don also talks to Margot Jarvis Rettleback, Executive Director of the Alberta Irrigation Districts Association, about how the province's irrigation system makes the best use of water designated for agricultural use.
So Lars, how did you get into distilling?
I guess it was a little bit of background. My grandfather distilled spirits in Europe after the Second World War to help feed his family. He sold it on the black market. Unfortunately, he passed away when I was quite young, and I never had any knowledge, recipes passed on, but I heard the stories and had an interest in it. And then after many years of farming and none of my children looking to take over the farm, I was losing the passion a little bit. And happened to go to a distillery in Scotland, and the start of the tour, when they said all you need to make scotch is barley, yeast, and water, it got me thinking that that might be a little more fun and maybe a little more lucrative than feeding barley to cows. So I shortly after that saw there was a 5-day distilling course available in Kelowna, and so I enrolled in that and came home with a little copper still and started distilling in my garage. And then things just led to, you know, to one thing to another, and here I am now.
So I'm familiar with malting barley varieties grown in Alberta, like Metcalf, Copeland, and Synergy, but you grow a different variety, particularly because your crops are grown under irrigation. So what is unique about growing barley under irrigation?
One of the things was they discovered that it was difficult to get your malting varieties to grade malt when they were grown under irrigation. I ended up growing feed varieties that were well suited to my farm. And being right in the feedlot industry here, many years, feed barley prices were the same as malting or even higher. So it worked out really well as a cash crop. And so when I got into distilling, I decided to set myself apart from other distillers by utilizing the grains that are grown best under irrigation. And so, you know, that was the varieties that I grow myself.
And those are?
For barley, it's CDC Austinson.
Austinson, so okay.
Yeah, it has nice plump kernels, so there's a lot of carbs in there, and so it leads to a lot of alcohol production, and it grows well on my farm. I don't like to push the inputs super well, super high, so just to avoid lodging problems, and so the Austinson has nice long straw that works well for the cattle operation. So I have good straw for that, and it is quite high yielding.
Right. And that, by the way, is why your distillery is called Pivot, correct?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Part of the reason is that all the crops that I grow are grown under pivot irrigation. And if there are some, inputs that I don't grow myself, I get them from my neighbors that are also grown under pivots.
Okay.
For example, my most popular liqueur is a Haskap berry liqueur. And And I get that from the Nobleford area, that, and it's grown under pivots also.
Other than barley, what are some others?
Yeah, I also grow soft wheat, triticale, and rye.
Oh, okay.
And I have also grown some of the ancient grain spelt.
Oh, okay. And you've tried using all of those in your spirits, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I'm using all of those in my spirits, especially the whiskeys. And so my whiskeys are just coming of age now, full-fledged whiskey. And it's a 3-grain mixed mash bill of rye, barley, and triticale.
Yeah.
And so it's available now. Just contact me.
Awesome.
Or email or whatever, and we can get a sample of that to you.
And hopefully people listening as well can contact you. And are they able to buy it from you, or do they have to go to a liquor store? Okay, perfect.
Yeah, no, so it's just a limited release. It's just a single barrel right now. So it's small quantity. So the only way is to contact us. You can contact us on our Instagram. Or email works really well. pivotspirits@gmail.com.
How water intensive is distilling? And then what do you do, given your, you farm under irrigation? So obviously you are very knowledgeable about water use and water management. How does that frame the way you distill?
Yeah, of course, we have great respect for water. One of the great attributes of the irrigated cropland is the high productivity and that the water enables to achieve. When I looked at the distilling side of things, I guess there's two main uses of water. One is for cooking the grain, so in the mash itself, and the other is in the process. So there's a lot of water used for cooling the vapors, and quite a few distilleries just dump that cooling water. And it is becoming more and more common to save it and to not be wasting that water. So I looked at a few different options, and I ended up just having a cooling tank of water that I that cycles through and cools in all the processes, and then when that water starts to warm up, I have a chiller. Powered by my solar panels, so I save some energy there. Mm-hmm. I basically just recycle all that cooling water.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
perfectly
good water.
And then for sure it is.
Yeah.
And the water in my mash, I distill on the grain. That means I don't remove the grain from the mash. And so when I've extracted all the alcohol, I have sort of a soupy porridge, mm-hmm. and I pump that out and haul it out to my cows and feed it to my cows.
Oh, awesome. So it sounds like there's almost zero water wastage.
Yes, very little. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Lars Hirsch is not alone in growing cereals under irrigation. Although irrigation crops tend to be regionalized, 5% of Alberta's wheat and barley acres and 10% of its durum are grown with the use of irrigation, and cereals represent about a third of all irrigated crops. As executive director of the Alberta Irrigation Districts Association, Marco Jarvis Rettelback is familiar with every aspect of the irrigation system. Dawn recently spoke with her about how the system works efficiently to serve farmers.
Welcome to the show, Margo.
Thank you, Dawn. I'm very pleased to be here today.
So for those who may be unfamiliar with the work of the Alberta Irrigation Districts Association, what does your organization do?
Well, the Alberta Irrigation Districts Association is really the industry association representing Alberta's 11 irrigation districts. And our main objectives are really to represent those 11 irrigation districts collectively on government relations and advocacy. As well, our association administers critical research and monitoring activities that are completed within the 11 irrigation districts. And we also support education and outreach to promote the benefits of irrigation to Alberta and Canada.
So then, in a nutshell, can you describe how Alberta's irrigation system operates to make water available to farmers?
Yeah. And I will be speaking to the 1.5 million acres of irrigated land within our 11 irrigation districts. Alberta is really blessed to have very extensive irrigation. Actually, all of the irrigation in the province represents about 75% of all of the irrigation that's practiced in the entire country of Canada.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Now, of that, about over two-thirds of it is practiced within the irrigation district. So it's very centralized to the southern Alberta region. Legally, when we talk about the irrigation system or conveyance system that supplies that land, first, there has to be water licenses in place. And our 11 districts do have water licenses granted from the province of Alberta that authorizes them to divert water from surface sources, those being our southern rivers, into conveyance infrastructure to distribute that water to many farms across that irrigated region. So there is a total of about 8,000 kilometers of linear infrastructure, and this includes buried water pipelines, as well as open conveyance canals. And that infrastructure moves water from the diversion points on the rivers across the area to the farm gate. Now that 8,000 kilometers of linear infrastructure, about 96% of it is owned and operated by our 11 irrigation districts, with only about 4% of it being owned and operated by Alberta Agriculture and Irrigation. Additionally, we have about 52 reservoirs in southern Alberta throughout the region that help move the water across by balancing, as well as holding the water back at the diversion points along the river. So 41 of those storage reservoirs are owned and operated by irrigation districts, 11 by Alberta Agriculture and Irrigation. And those reservoirs are very, very important because they really do provide significant water security by ensuring that we can divert water when flows are high in the river and store for use later in the season. So that's really key to the water security that is enjoyed by all of our farmers and many other users, including municipalities, as well as industry, and to support wetlands and wildlife habitat and recreation across the region.
So you're not isolated. You have to work with everybody else as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you think about southern Alberta, you know that there are a lot of towns and hamlets and farmyards that are located quite a distance from good quality surface water sources in our rivers. So those users are able to access water through that linear conveyance system in order to ensure that their domestic needs are met and their industrial needs are met.
Right. Can you describe a bit? I understand that starting in late 2021, the irrigation system is being modernized and expanded and maybe made more efficient. Can you maybe describe some of that?
Yeah, I can. First, I would note that modernization or rehabilitation of our linear conveyance infrastructure has really been ongoing since the late 1960s. And this work has been supported by cost-sharing partnerships that exist between the government of Alberta and irrigation districts, as well as internal irrigation district capital works programs. So that modernization work has really been going on for almost 50 years. Okay. And it's been going on at a pretty good pace. In late 2020, a new program to expedite the rehabilitation and modernization of the conveyance infrastructure was announced. And that program had partnership with irrigation districts, the Government of Alberta, and the Canada Infrastructure Bank. Districts agreed to provide 20% of the costs of modernization for a number of projects up front. The GOA provided a 30% grant, and then the Canada Infrastructure Bank provided to districts a long-term low-interest financing agreement for the remaining 50% of the funds. So that means that our irrigators are essentially paying for 70% of the total work approved under the program. And the goal of this program was really to expedite the pace of rehabilitation and modernization activities of the infrastructure. And that was really to increase the water saved from undertaking a number of activities under the program. We see really substantial water savings created through the reduction of evaporation, seepage, and by being better able to match water supply with water demand. And some of the activities that are being undertaken through all of the different programs that are out there and available to irrigation districts to make those water savings is things like replacing open canals with buried water pipelines, lining large canals with poly liners so that we're reducing seepage, upgrading some of the water control structures so that it's using the latest technology, and then automating the conveyance system. And what that does is it really helps ensure that that water supply that's flowing through the conveyance system is matched closely with the demand coming in from the farmers on farm.
I see. So that sounds great. Obviously, less waste and being more efficient sounds awesome, but notwithstanding all of that good work, we can't control the weather. You can't control the weather, or water creation. And I understand that in the area around Brooks last year, there were, water rates were raised, and there was even, I think, some restriction in water use for a period of time. So, and I understand that was like the first time ever. So I was just wondering why that became necessary and, you know, what can be done to hopefully avoid that type of restriction in the future.
Yeah, and I'll start with the water rates. So water rates are charged by all irrigation districts. And what water rates do is they essentially cover the revenue generated from the water rate covers the cost of operation and maintenance on the infrastructure. So when, you know, districts have thousands and hundreds of kilometers of canals and buried water pipelines, it does take money to move that water through those pipelines and those canals. You have to have water operators that can control the flow of the water through the infrastructure so that you have control over it and you don't have any infrastructure failures. And you know, there's also regular maintenance that has to be done on a lot of the infrastructure. Things like replacing deliveries for farmers just because of normal wear and tear. So that's why water rates are really in place is it helps generate revenue so that the particular district can efficiently and with financial efficiency operate their district.
Right.
Just depending on where things are at, and we have seen quite a bit of inflation over the last couple of years. So the cost of supplies and of course the cost of services has increased. So we have seen water rates across all of our districts starting to inch up and be raised over the last couple of years to address that. In terms of irrigation restrictions, yes, the EID was a district that did implement some rationing. Most of our districts across Southern Alberta implemented some sort of rationing this year. 2023 is really going down probably in history as being a very exceptional drought year, and a drought year that probably has never been observed in the South Saskatchewan River Basin in recent memory. We had generally lower than average mountain snowpack, which is ultimately our primary reservoir for water that feeds our rivers here in southern Alberta. And in combination with that below average snowpack last spring, we saw hotter than average temperatures in May and June. That melted the snowpack earlier than normal, meaning that we had a freshet that occurred about 1 month earlier than average. And we had really no significant precipitation across all of our districts, including in the EID, for most of the season. It was very, very sparse when it came to rain anywhere across the region.
So kind again, of a perfect storm of bad.
Absolutely. So with a lack of precipitation, you have higher demand from the irrigators because those crops need water in order to grow. So that's one of the reasons why districts started instituting rationing, and the EID did as well. I'd say that most of our districts are very conservative. They're trying to find a good balance, but they're also trying to make sure that they can provide enough water, not only for their irrigators, but also for the other users that have their own licenses, but draw water from the conveyance infrastructure. So in a large part, that's municipalities who may be drawing from district reservoirs. So they're trying to find that balance of maintaining reservoir storage while also providing the service of irrigation water delivery to their irrigators. And as I said, most districts did do some form of rationing, whether that was rationing the on-farm allocation level for irrigators, or whether that was shutting off their operations earlier than normal, or whether that was restricting fall irrigation to only fall cover crops. It's different across every district, and that's because each district has different reservoir storage capacity, and they're all in different sub-basins. So the water flowing at them through their diversion points is often at different levels as well.
Right. So can anything be done about avoiding these in the future, or is it really just we had a horrible year?
Water security is critical.
Yeah.
Like I said, it is a really exceptional year. And, you know, we are anticipating that with climate change, we'll see more extreme events on both ends of the spectrum. And that means the potential for more flood events and the potential for more drought events. So, you know, I mentioned irrigation storage reservoirs earlier in our conversation. And really, it's being able to store water that is key to ensuring that we continue to have good water security, particularly during those drought situations like we experienced this year. Right. Having additional capacity to be able to take that water when it's flowing fast and hard, divert it into a storage structure, and then have it available throughout the rest of the year is extremely important. And there are several large-scale infrastructure options that are currently being considered through feasibility studies. And there's several more that are proposed that show great promise of being able to capture water when the flows are high and store it for later use.
Awesome. Good news.
It is good news. It just takes a long time. And a lot of money to get through. And, you know, there has to be thoughtful consideration given to any proposal because it is, you know, it's more than just irrigation. You have to look at the environmental impacts, and you have to look at you know, the benefits for other users and that sort of thing. So it is a long process to get from an idea on paper to an approved and constructed and commissioned project.
Okay. Do you have any advice for farmers in terms of how they should be thinking about irrigation and how they use water? Or maybe is there something that you wish people understood better about irrigation and their access to water?
I think one of the things that maybe the general public or individuals who aren't really involved in irrigation or know much about irrigation don't know is that our irrigators have made huge capital investments on farm to ensure that they are using water in the most responsible way they can. And what I mean by that is the fact that 84% of the irrigated area in our irrigation districts is currently being irrigated with low pressure drop to center pivot systems. These are systems that are over 80% efficient in their water application, and they're the best systems that we have out there. They are very expensive capital investments for irrigators, but so many of our irrigators have moved forward, particularly in the last 25 years, to install these systems on their parcels, that it's created significant water savings. It allows them to really better match the water that they're applying to their crop and allows them to increase their yields. I would say that was a real game changer, and the irrigators in Southern Alberta really jumped into that and continue to make investments to look at how better to, you know, bring in more real-time technology options so that they can understand and apply water exactly where it's needed in the field. So there's still more to come when we talk about some future technologies that can be brought into these systems. And I know that I have so many progressive irrigators across the South that are excited about some of that new technology may allow them to do when it comes to responsible water
use. And that's it for another edition of the Grains West podcast. Read the digital edition of the magazine at grainswest.com.